Track 6. Welcome once again to the Sports Desk for our latest report. And dealing first with the local cricket action over last weekend, the Pedmore Club followed up their excellent victory against Hagley the week before with another, this time dismissing Cookley, who had been joint league leaders, for a paltry 111 in reply to Pedmore's own total of 255 for 8. Victory doesn't come more emphatic than that, and thanks to these consecutive victories, the Pedmore Club have eased themselves somewhat away from the relegation places in the Worcestershire County League. Meanwhile, Hagley recorded their second consecutive defeat, going down by 4 wickets on their visit to Redditch. As a result, Redditch have swept up to join Worcester in the leading league positions, and Hagley have dropped down to 5th place, some 20 points behind the leaders. In the second division, Old Swinford seem to have lost the spark that had me reporting 2 or 3 weeks ago that they seem to have turned a corner after a poor start to the season. On Saturday, they slumped to a second consecutive heavy loss, all out for 135 in reply to Chadley Corbett's 285 for 7. But Balbroughton continue to climb the league table after a 3-wicket win over Bromyard. I remember describing South Africa's second innings in the first test match at Lord's as farcical last week. I should have reserved judgment, as England's performance in this week's second match at Trent Bridge was no better. England were outplayed by the visitors from the first day, and the match ended early on the fourth afternoon in a victory to South Africa by well over 300 runs. No player in the England 11 emerged with credit from this performance, which levels the series at 1-1, leaving all to play for. Skipper Joe Root's 78 runs in the first innings was England's highest individual score by some margin, while former skipper Alistair Cook's 42 in their second was by some way the highest then. South Africa bowled well, set fields designed to trap English batsmen into indiscretions, and they thoroughly deserved their victory. On now to the third match at the Oval later next week with all to play for. Now, anyone for women's cricket? It was a coincidence, but just as the English men's 11 were being trounced by South Africa, England's women were meeting the same opponent in the semi-final of the Women's World Cup. If it's close finishes and excitement you want, you couldn't have done better these last 10 days than watch England in this competition. I mentioned last week England's 3-run victory over Australia, which was nerve-wracking enough, but on Tuesday this week, well, let me set the scene. Our girls had beaten each of the other teams in the competition except for the very first match, which they lost to India. The top 4 teams in the competition qualified for the semi-finals, and having played 7 matches and won 6, England finished top of the league table of 8 countries and, as such, played the semi-final against the country who finished in 4th place, and that was South Africa. The tension as this match progressed was very nearly unbearable. South Africa batted first and scored a total of 218 from the 50 overs. Not too formidable, you'd think, and England started steadily in reply, but a mid-innings collapse, where have we heard that before, reduced them from 139 for 2 to 145 for 5 in the space of 11 balls. The later order batsmen steadied the ship, but were surely scoring too slowly. South Africa had a grip on the field and runs were hard to come by. 9 overs went by while only 28 runs were added, and by now England were up against it. Enter Jenny Gunn batting at number 8, and if you'll excuse the pun, she was the one who pulled the trigger. Her 27 runs scored off 27 balls made all the difference, but it was close. England got over the line with just 2 balls of the 50 overs remaining and 2 wickets in hand. In fact, it was Anya Shrubsole who made the winning hit. She only appeared with 3 balls left when England's 8th wicket fell and dispatched the first ball she received for 4 to achieve the win. The English girls are making a thing of these close finishes. You can watch the final at Lord's on Sunday on television. The opponents will be either Australia or India, who are due to meet in the other semi-final today. In the middle of July, it's perhaps a bit odd to switch from cricket to rugby union, but a couple of articles in last week's Stourbridge News show that it won't be long before the new season is with us. When it arrives, Stourbridge Rugby will be playing their home matches on an artificial pitch. The club accepted an offer from the Rugby Football Union to have a new first-team pitch installed at a cost of about £750,000, and the work of installing it is underway. The club will benefit from having a reliable surface in which to play their home matches, whatever the weather, and use of the pitch will be available for other clubs, bringing more visitors to the facility with, it's hoped, an increased income from the Stourbridge club. And talking of Stourbridge rugby, their amateur club, the Stourbridge Lions, having earned promotion at the end of last season, are due to play their rugby at a higher level this coming season and will be in the same league as local rivals Dudley Kings Winford and also nearby Bromsgrove. The DK club were reported in the newspaper to have begun pre-season training with an enlarged squad of players this year and to be very much looking forward to locking horns with these nearby clubs. I hope to keep you up to date with news of all the local rugby teams once the season gets going. Now for this week's Speedway Roundup, and the Wolverhampton Wolves have been busy with two matches over the weekend. I mentioned last week that on Saturday they faced a potentially tricky visit to Rye House, a team they narrowly beat the week before on their home track, and rather as feared, Wolves lost this one by 48 points to 42. The previous Saturday, as I reported last time, Wolves' Freddie Lindgren was racing before a crowd of 50,000 people in the World Championships in Poland. This time it was in front of 1,000 or two in Hertfordshire, but he couldn't inspire his team to win. Wolves were always in contention during the match. Indeed, they were in the lead halfway through, but with one or two of their riders underperforming, they couldn't hold on. Then, back at their own track on Monday evening, they faced the Poole Pirates. On paper, another tough fixture, and so it proved. Wolves looked to be in the driving seat early on, but then their rider, Kyle Howarth, was involved in a collision with one of the Poole riders, which sent him crashing into the safety fence. Unconscious, he was whisked off to hospital, but the team, a key man down, never recovered, and they lost the match and their unbeaten home record by 44 points to 48. The Wolves are still just a point behind league leaders Bellevue, but thanks to this big away win, the Poole team are now breathing down their necks in third place. Howarth, by the way, was found to be suffering concussion, but thankfully no broken bones, and he should be up and running again next week. The Cradley Heathens in the National League were thrashed 57-33 by the Birmingham Brummies earlier in July, but they gained some recompense with a close-fought 48 points to 41 home victory over Plymouth last week, which leaves them in fourth place in the National League table. Well, the Tour de France Cycling Marathon has now entered its final week. Usually by this stage, I'm watching each day's leg unfold with my map of France on my knee, but now that the Wimbledon tennis is a week later, I'm an even more avid watcher of that, I've not seen much of the action this time. Chris Froome and Team Sky are trying to win the Tour for the third year in a row, and after establishing an early and narrow lead, there was a scare last week in the Pyrenees. Froome's legs seemed to give out on a climb to that day's finish, and he was unable to respond when the Italian rider Fabio Aru outclimbed him and took the overall lead. However, Froome and Team Sky fought back, and the British rider showed he'd lost none of his staying power as he reclaimed the overall lead within a couple of days. But Froome's trials were not over, however. Nearing the finish of Sunday's stage, he suffered a puncture and was stuck at the roadside for about half a minute until one of his teammates arrived, swapped his rear wheel for Froome's, and the leader was able to do enough to keep his overall lead in the Tour, which currently stands at 18 seconds. After 2.5 weeks of gruelling competition, the end is in sight at last. The Tour will finish with its usual parade along the Champs-Élysées in Paris this Sunday. Mention of Wimbledon there leads me to review the tennis, which gripped with its intensity as usual. Just as well, I said last time when I was previewing Andy's quarter-final against Sam Querrey that it was best to take nothing for granted. Murray was never at his best. He moved slower and slower as the match progressed until finally he was hardly moving at all. That right hip, which has been troubling him off and on for a few months, decided that this was the opportunity to make itself felt, and by the end of that match, Querrey was playing a man who looked as though he was 70 years old, not 30. With Nadal and Djokovic already out of the way, everything was nicely poised for Roger Federer to earn his 8th Wimbledon singles title, and he duly obliged in Sunday's final, trouncing the Croat Marin Cilic. Federer went through the tournament without dropping a set, looked as fresh as a daisy at the end, and unless they make him play left-handed, it appears as though he could go on winning Wimbledon for years. Jo Konta must have enjoyed her run to the semi-final stage, where she fell to Venus Williams. The 6-4, 6-2 winning margin of the American make it seem like a one-sided match, but it was anything but. The result seemed to me to turn on just one or two key points, and Jo has nothing to be ashamed of. Indeed, the latest world rankings have moved her up to fourth. However, it was Williams herself who seemed to implode in the women's final on Saturday when she fell apart after losing the opening set against the Spaniard Muguruza, and she lost the second set 6-love. Meanwhile, Andy Murray retains his world number one spot, but it's in danger, and we don't know yet if he will be fit enough to take part in the US Open, the next of the major tournaments, which starts in New York at the very end of August. Normally, he'd want to play in a couple of US hard court tournaments as a warm-up before the Open itself. That's it for this week's news. No time even to mention Lewis Hamilton's win in the British Formula One Grand Prix at Silverstone on Sunday. I'll be back with the latest sports news next time, but until then, it's goodbye from Brian Gall.